From the authentic soul of Bernie Siegel, MD, comes Mind Health Matters, a show that reflects Bernie's passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges, not just the physical ones, so that each person can live life fully with the understanding that, as Bernie reminds us, we only have today. Believing that we are all here to love one another, each in our own unique way, Bernie has crafted eternal truths and the timeless wisdom of the ages. Join Bernie as he shares his powerful journey through life while offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom.
Welcome, everyone, to another amazing episode of Mind Health Matters with the Dr. Bernie Siegel. And if you're tuning in for the first time, we are the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. We're syndicated with a number of other stations and mediums, as well as all the technology that you would like to have to listen to a radio station, we have it. Whether you're in the car, whether you're in another country, whether you're doing any kind of in-house, online, wherever you are, you can listen to Dr. Bernie's show, which airs Wednesday through Friday, 12 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern Time. Well, Bernie has a great guest. We're going to be talking about a book called Medicine and Miracles in the High Desert, My Life Among the Navajo People, with Dr. Erica Elliott, who is an MD. And the book is about bridging the cultural divide through efforts to understand and see the world through the eyes of other people, the people who were here first, Dr. Erica mentions. So, Bernie, there you go.
Thank you. I always say I love the books and the people that I agree with. It's easier to sit and listen, because years ago, Ashley Montague, the anthropologist who did a lot of work on love, and actually in many ways the things we're talking about, because even as an anthropologist, he was talking about mind-body reactions. And after we both spoke at a workshop for general public, he came over to me, he said, "I love what you had to say, but you have to understand it's because I agree with you." And you know, I can say the same thing about Erica's work. And we were talking before the show that we both have been through the same thing, how people criticized us, that we're very controversial, we're not scientific, we're just telling, you know, case histories, it's not statistically valid, what journal was it in? The medical profession still has such closed minds. Even when I volunteer to local medical schools in my area and say, "Hey, would you like me to come over and talk?" You don't even get an answer to your email. It's so sad that we're into the technology. And let me give you a quote from Jung that I always keep repeating. Then we'll open the door for Erica. He said, "The diagnosis," and remember, this is well over 100 years ago, "the diagnosis may help the doctor, but it doesn't help the patient. For there, the key thing is the story, for it alone shows human background and human suffering, and only at that point can the doctor's therapy begin to operate." And I think, I mean, what interested me so much in this book was, again, it's Erica's in one culture, the Navajo is in another, and communicating and knowing their story versus, "Oh, you have this, here's a pill, a prescription, go to the drugstore." It's knowing the story. And I may say the native tribes all over the world understand that the story, and why it's the title of this hour, Mind Matters. You know, what mind, I mean, we have the word health in it too, mind health matters. And that's so damn true. The health of your mind matters to your body. I always say Monday morning is a terrific example when we have more heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses. You don't like what you're doing on Monday, your body responds. And the same is true when you go to the doctor and for treatment and everything else. You've got to coordinate all that. I think I'll tell one more story because it's related to your book, what really touched me in the book. You learned how to speak the Navajo language. And I was reading how that had an effect, you said, on the children when you were talking to them or teaching them, because you were speaking their language. And what it reminded me of, I was at a local hospital in Connecticut, and as a resident physician, and I got a call in the middle of the night. We have a man here who needs surgery. He's got an abdominal problem and he needs to get to the operating room, but he won't let anybody take care of him who doesn't speak Polish. Can you help us? So I go down to the emergency room. I walk over to this man who's lying there, and I said, "Jak se masz?" That is the only Polish words I know, except if you're feeling well, you say, "Dobrze," I'm okay, because it means, "How are you?" in Polish. And I walked over to him, and I said, "Jak se masz?" And he said, "That's my doctor." He had a ruptured appendix and wouldn't let people, you know, who didn't speak Polish take care of him. And he was a rock, that guy. After about 3 days, you know, he said, "I have to go back to take care of the farm." I said, you need antibiotics. You had a hurt." He said, "I have to go." I knew this was not a guy who was going to go home and die. So I collected all medications, everything, gave them to him. And, you know, I couldn't force him to stay in the hospital, and he went home and was fine. But that reminded me of you and the Native Indian children. You know, I entered his world, you entered theirs. And now, Deb, tell me how this happened. You know, how did you end up there and everything else?
I'll tell you, I graduated from college, and I got a degree in education. So I was looking through the trade journals, and nothing looked very interesting to me, except then I came across this little blurb about a boarding school in Chinle, Arizona, and I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know anything about Navajo people, but I am guided by some kind of inner compass that tells me this is what you need to do, and I had no idea why I needed to do it. And my friends and family said, "That's, you know, why do you want to go to a boarding school and teach, you know, in such a remote area?" And I couldn't really answer. I just said, "I know this is what I have to do." And so I didn't get any answer from them. And so I figured they didn't want me. And so I just decided to take a year off and travel around. When I finally got to my sister in California a year later, there was the letter from the board, from the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Washington, D.C., and it had been forwarded trying to catch up with me. And they did want me, but this was a year later, so I thought for sure they had filled it. So I called Washington, and they said, "Oh, no, we want you now." And I said, "Now? But, you know, the next school year has already started." They said, "Well, we haven't found anyone to fill the position." And so my sister said, "This sounds suspicious. If they can't find anyone to fill it, are you sure you want to do this?" And I said, "Yes, I do. I don't know why, but I feel like I have to do this." So I borrowed some money from my sister. I got this junky van and drove through the Southwest and ended up in this dusty little town that looked like it was from another era. It was all dirt roads, and there was maybe a few stores and a gas station, and that's it. It was like I'd come to the middle of nowhere. And it wasn't very pretty right where the town was. It's very dusty, and everything was just various shades of brown. So I thought, wow, this isn't exactly what I thought. And then when I got to the school, they didn't give me any orientation about Navajo people, their culture, their land, nothing. And I went into the class, and again, it was end of September. School had already begun. And I had a Navajo teacher aide, and it was the weirdest experience. The students did not look at me. They did not talk to me. I couldn't communicate at all with them. It was terribly frustrating. I was flustered, and I thought maybe it's because I was a new teacher and there's something incompetent about me, and so I tried harder and harder, and I was getting nowhere. And the white school teachers, they're all old, and I thought people in their late 50s were old, because I was like 23 at the time, and they were just waiting to retire. They seemed bored. They didn't really like it there, and they had nothing nice to say about the Navajo people. And I felt, oh, my God, this is so weird. And when I was in town, nobody talked to me. They looked down. So finally, after a few days, I called my parents, and I said, you were right, I made a big mistake. I'm coming home. And my father said, no, you haven't given it a chance. You should wait there 3 months. You can't judge a person or place or culture by 1 week. You know, why don't you make up your mind after 3 months? And I said, okay, but I know what the answer is going to be. So the very next day, my teacher aide, who is very shy, but she knew the white world very well. Her father was a famous code talker in World War II, and her brother was a famous artist, R.C. Gorman. So she knew the white world and the traditional Navajo world. This was 50 years ago. And she very calmly, quietly said, would you like to learn about my people? And just that invitation changed my life. I said, yes, I don't understand anything that's going on. I'm totally confused. And she explained what happened, why the children didn't look at me. It's because they were showing respect, and they were terribly shy. They came from very remote areas. They had very little interaction with white people. And they didn't talk to me because, believe it or not, they reached the fourth grade barely able to speak English, because the materials they couldn't relate to, Dick and Jane stuff, and the teachers didn't show much interest in them, and so they didn't really learn much. And so she showed me all the cultural blunders I had made, and like embarrassing the children in front of everybody and stuff like that, and it was so eye-opening. And then she said, if you really want to reach these children, you can do something that white people never even think about doing. And she said, if I can teach you a few words, I think that's going to make a whole difference. So she taught me how to say, hello, my children. My name is Erica Elliott, and what's your name and where do you come from? And that is, so the next day, I practiced way into the night. The Navajo language is the hardest language in the world. That's why it was never broken during World War II, because it wasn't a code.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It was a language, and nobody could break it. And I'm linguistically oriented. I've lived all over the world, and my mother's Swiss, so I already spoke several languages, so I was wired for languages, but this was like nothing I had ever come across in my life. Like, for example, one vowel, you can have about 15 different ways to pronounce that one vowel. So if you don't say it exactly right, you're saying something completely different. So when my first attempt was probably, probably very funny. So I walked into the classroom the next morning and I said, and so everybody looked up all at once in total shock. It's the first time they made eye contact with me. And then suddenly the whole room burst out laughing, and the girls had their hands over their mouth trying not to laugh too hard. And then it became a total love affair. I fell madly in love with the students, and they wanted so badly for me to learn about their life and their families and their sheep and Canyon de Chelly that they learned English like a house on fire. In fact, at the end of the year, and I have a newspaper article to prove this because it's so outrageous, that four of them won a regional speech contest. I mean, these people were so motivated. And Bernie, this is, you're up your alley. It was love. It was love that
right.
was so magical, so transformative. And then what happened is That first day, one of the bravest boys in the class, Billy Begay, he spoke the most English of anybody, and which wasn't much. And he came up to my desk at the end of the day, and he said with a heavy Navajo accent, he said, "Take me home." And I said, "What?" And he said, "Take me home." And I said, "You mean check you out of the boarding school?" And he said, "Oh, oh," means yes in Navajo. "Oh." And so I said, "You mean this weekend?" And he said, "Oh." And I said, "You mean I take you home this weekend?" "Oh, to where do you live?" And he said that in the Canyon de Chelly. And I said, "Okay." And so I checked him out from the boarding school, drove him in my four-wheel drive deep into the canyon, and it was the most beautiful place I'd ever seen in my life. It was so magical. And so I drove him all the way to, you know, and then we hiked down this remote trail to his hogan. And I had the most wonderful weekend racing horses bareback and eating their food and participating in their life. So every weekend, a kid asked me to check them out and take them home. By the end of the year, I had taken everybody to their home. I had participated in their ceremonies that white people never see, never experience. They invited me to participate in their whole life, everything they do. And so I started really learning Navajo, so pretty soon I could have conversations in Navajo. And eventually, the government heard about this white woman at the boarding school who was learning Navajo and had done a deep dive into the culture. And so they asked in Washington if my classroom could be one of the pilot programs. This is a brand new concept, bilingual, bicultural education. So my classroom was chosen for that. So they actually encouraged me to do what I was doing, even though it had nothing to do with their regular curriculum, which is to read Dick and Jane type books. Mm. My students made their own material to learn, like we'd take a trip to the post office or something, then they come back and write about it in English. So so their learning became very meaningful. It was all about their life. Anyway, I fell madly in love with those students, and we had such a strong bond. And it's interesting because they could not say Miss Elliot. It was so they called me Ellet, E-L-L-T. It was so sweet. And do you have any questions for me, Bernie?
Well, I'm entranced. It is such a pleasure to listen to you. Just your story, you know, and I keep saying what I learned years ago, and I say to you, keep telling stories, because when I spoke to medical groups, I would get criticized because I was talking like a doctor, you know, but you talk about a study, and they'd say that was poorly controlled, that was in a journal with a lousy reputation. They didn't want to agree with me and listen to me.
Right.
But when I told what I called anecdotes or stories, then nobody felt threatened. And
yeah.
I could hear them walking out of the auditorium saying, "Well, that was just an anecdote. That was just a case history."
Right.
So, but it opened them up, because then when something would happen, they'd come to me and say, "I got to tell you a story. You'll enjoy this one." And it made them change rather than argue with me.
Right.
And part of the problem, whether it's Navajo or people, what I learned was taking care of people is not part of medical education, because we separate people into parts. And I wrote articles for journals, sent it to medical journals. They came back saying it's interesting, but it's not appropriate for our journal. And this was about mind, body, dreams, drawings, all kinds of things. So I sent it to a psychiatry journal, and it came back saying, "It's interesting, but it isn't, it's appropriate, but it isn't interesting. We know all this."
Oh, God.
And that, you know, is part of what just breaks down the whole freaking system. Because what changed me is similar to you, except, you know, the people I was taking care of spoke English. But one of them said to me, I need to know how to live between office visits. Her full quote was, you're a nice guy. I feel better when I'm in the office with you, but I can't take you home with me. So I need to know how to live between office visits. And, you know, that just popped into my head. I never thought of what she said. I can't take you home with me. They took you home with them.
Yeah,
and see,
literally.
And she said, I can't take you home. And that, so I started support groups to get people together and we could talk the same language and help each other.
Yes.
Well, we're coming up on a break, if I may interject.
Okay.
And so, see how quickly that went by?
Well,
if you'd like to get in touch with Dr. Erica Elliott, you can go on either two sites. She has a blog, which is musingsmemoirandmedicine.com. Musingsmemoirandmedicine.com. And her site for all information, interviews, and such, it's medicineandmiraclesinthehighdesert.com. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every week, Wednesday through Friday, 12 p.m. and 12 a.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Darkest hours to brightest moments, transformation from despair to happiness, and chaos to clarity. Real people, real pain, real healing. Life-threatening illness, death, abusive relationships, divorce, and overcoming addiction are challenges these men and women faced head-on. See how they emerged stronger and happier. Buy the new book, Chaos to Clarity, Sacred Stories of Transformational Change by Reverend Patricia Caginello and Kathleen O'Keefe Cannabis. Available on sacredstoriespublishing.com and worldwide through Amazon and other retailers.
Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings and the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, inspiring true stories of healing, gratitude, and love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, daily messages of inspiration, hope, and love, and Faith, Hope, and Healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful, loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent. To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles.
Ever wonder what it's like to have your own radio show? Well, wonder no longer, because you can dip into the radio airwaves by being host for the day on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. It's a fabulous way to get your radio feet wet. It's an opportunity to market your business, modality, or book. Have a guest, mention a sponsor, and take callers. Or you may want to facilitate a lesson by going solo. It's up to you. Listeners can be online, mobile, in cars with Bluetooth, or listen through Amazon's Echo by asking, Alexa, play Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. For more details, go to DreamVision7Radio.com and click on Host for the Day.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
And we are back. You're listening to the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. We're a syndicated internet radio station with all the bells and whistles. We're also the media partner for the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York. You're listening to Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel and his guest, Dr. Eric Erica Elliott, who's actually a family medicine doctor and an environmental medicine doctor. And I'd be interested in hearing what made her go back to the Navajo community. So, Bernie, back to you.
Yeah, Erica, I was kind of thinking the same thing, is what made you who you are. Because I want you to think for a minute, and then you can talk about it. If I said to you, draw yourself working as a doctor, what would you draw? Well, let me tell you why I ask you that, all right? People will know the contrast. Because in medical schools, it shocked me when only one person in this class drew himself giving a patient a tissue and putting the arm around her. While she was in a wheelchair. Everybody else drew themselves sitting at a desk with a diploma behind them on the wall. No patient in the room. Why did you become a doctor? I'd say you did it for healthy reasons and related to people, just as I did. And then it got us into trouble, in a sense, because we were different. Go ahead.
So I came into the world knowing that I had a purpose, and maybe other people do too, but I didn't know that other people do too. I thought that I just had this feeling that I was here and my life was more than just being born and doing a few things and dying, that I had to do something, but I had no idea what it was, no idea at all. And so after teaching on the reservation, I realized that I'd found a piece of the purpose of my life, and that piece was being of service to people in some way that I was gifted. And I didn't know where I was gifted, but I knew how to care about people and love them. And so I knew that whatever I chose would involve helping people through my caring about them. But I didn't know if it was teaching. And so my curiosity kept me going, and I went into the Peace Corps, and I taught bilingual education and created bilingual materials for the Quechua-speaking Indians high up in the Andes. I spoke fluent Spanish, so I could do that. And I also tried to teach nutrition, but even though, you know, I wasn't trained in it, I had a lot of personal interest in nutrition all my life. And the mestizos felt like when I taught them how to do home gardens and grow quinoa and stuff, they thought I was teaching them to go backwards because they were proud that they could buy food from the store even though it was junk food. And so that's when I told the Peace Corps I needed to find something different, where the people really wanted it, and that was bilingual education. So I lived high up in the Andes, and when I was there, I talked my way into joining an all-male climbing club from the Polytechnical Institute, and somehow they let me in, even though it's for men only. They taught me how to climb. I'd bluff my way in saying I'd hiked up high mountains, and I listed the mountains. Of course, they'd never heard of them, Mount Washington, Mount Jefferson, which were like anthills compared to their 23,000-foot peaks. And so they taught me everything. I became their mascot, and I became a very well-trained climber. I ended up doing a first ascent on a peak, which was terrifying, and they named the peak after me in Ecuador. It's called Pico Erika Elliot, which is part of a bigger mountain called Sincholagua. And then I ended my time in the Peace Corps climbing the highest mountain in the Western Hemisphere called Aconcagua, which is 23,000 feet, and I was the first American woman to climb it. It had been climbed by 7 other women, but I was the first American. And so all that was about trying to find my purpose, because a Navajo grandmother, after I was sniffed by a mountain lion, and she said that That was a very important thing that happened, that the mountain lion was trying to give me its strength and focus and perseverance for what I would be facing. She would said I'd be facing some life-threatening experiences, and if I survived, I would, quote, have powerful medicine to give to the people. And thank God I wrote that in my journal. Otherwise, I never would have remembered that. But what I did remember is that I'd be facing these big challenges somehow when I was on my search for finding purpose. And so I felt like the mountaineering was training myself, mind and body, for some huge, terrifying thing that was going to happen to me. And then I came back, and I really had culture shock coming back to America. Usually it's the other way. You have culture shock when you go abroad. I had terrible culture shock when I came home. And with the way Americans lived and stuff, it seemed so sterile compared to what I was exposed to. And in trying to find my way, first I led like Outward Bound. I became an Outward Bound instructor, teaching rock climbing and so forth. I was trying to still find my way. And then I decided I wanted some biology courses at the University of Colorado. So it turned out that all my classmates were in pre-med, and I had this mistaken idea that you had to be brilliant to be a doctor, because my uncle was a brilliant physician in Switzerland. I'm third generation of doctors there from in Switzerland, and so I had the mistaken idea you had to be brilliant. These people in pre-med were not brilliant at all, but they were very good at memorizing. And so I thought, I can do this. I had never even considered medicine before, because I felt that I had this very extreme, unrealistic impression of how you had to be as a doctor. And so now I saw that was false, that I could easily do this. And so then my advisor told me not to apply to med school. It would be a waste of time because I was too old. I was 29 at the time. So he said, you'd be in med school at 31. That's too old. And I was a woman. It's harder to get in as a woman. I had no money because I'd come back from the Peace Corps. And I had a liberal arts background. He said, you're never going to get in. So I said, but why are you discouraging me? And he said, because it costs money to apply. You have to buy a suit and stay in a hotel and airfare and all that stuff. So that's the way to get me to really do something, if somebody say I can't do it.
Yes.
So he said the right thing. So I got a letter from Stanford asking for an interview. And I showed it to him, and I said, you know, you must never discourage somebody who has a vision for themselves. This is, I finally found my purpose in life, and so I am going to go to medical school. And that Stanford interview, fortunately, I didn't know all the pre-med culture, that you're supposed to be obsequious and do whatever you're told and stuff. I wasn't raised in that kind of culture. So when I got a request from Stanford to come out there to interview me, I was just honest. I said, I don't have the money to come out there. Can you come out here? And then there was a long silence on the phone. And then I thought, uh-oh, I think I said something wrong. And then I said, I could give you the best interview you've ever had in your life. I have extra skis and stuff from teaching for Outward Bound. I could take you to Rocky Mountain Park. We could sit on a log, and you could interview me in the snow, in the sun, and I could provide, you know, a picnic lunch. The guy said, I'll get back with you. And I told my classmates, and they said, you idiot. You just blew it. You blew your chance. And so the guy calls me up the next day and says, well, you know, I talked to my supervisors, and they said you're just the kind of person we're looking for, because we want about 5% of our class to be people who are unusual. And you're extremely unusual. So he came out there, and we sat on a log. I gave him skis and everything and taught him how to cross-country ski. And he did say, this is the best interview I've ever done in my life. But
wow.
But anyway, I ended up not going to Stanford. I ended up going to University of Colorado because they offered to pay for 2 years, all expenses, everything, all expenses. And then the other 2 years, the National Health Service Corps said they would pay for it. And in return, I would serve in an underserved area. Mm. And that's why the chapter opens of the book in Cuba, New Mexico, in the middle of nowhere. I chose that spot to serve Navajo people for my 2 years to pay back my loan. And that was life-changing, too. And I was put in situations that were way over my head. And so, anyway, I was in mainstream medicine for 10 years, and I realized this is not my purpose in life to give out pills.
But let me interrupt you for 1 minute, just in terms of the course of your life. Jung also said, and Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who was a friend of mine, I would always hear from her, Bernie, there are no coincidences. And so all the things that happen to you, and look where you end up, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You could say these are setbacks and redirections and problems, but there are no coincidences. So you met the right people. And I've had this happen in my life, too, when supposedly things go wrong, but then you meet people. I mean, let me just add this, because we've both written books. In college, I got a C. See, you were talking about your grades. I got a C in creative writing, the only C in 4 years of college.
Wow.
And one day somebody said to me after a lecture, do you ever think of writing a book, save you time and trouble, help more people than going everywhere? I said, no, I don't know how to write a book. Well, he talked to somebody who talked to somebody who talked to somebody, and boom. Love, Medicine, and Miracles.
Wow,
got written.
That book made such a huge impact. And you might point out to your listening audience that two of the words in the title of my book are two thirds your title. Your
right,
title,
I love it.
Right.
Medicine
and
Miracles.
Well, it's time, Bernie and Dr. Erica, that we are going for our last break. Everyone out there, if you'd like to connect with Dr. Bernie, you can go right on his site. It's BernieSiegelMD.com, Siegel, S-I-E-G-E-L, BernieSiegelMD.com. We'll be back more with Dr. Bernie and his guest, Dr. Erica Elliott.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every week, Wednesday through Friday, 12 p.m. and 12 a.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Looking for a fun and relaxing getaway? Omega's Rest and Rejuvenation Retreats are a great way to unwind and renew your spirit. Stroll through the garden, relax by the lake, or try a daily yoga or movement class. You can stretch your body, quiet your mind, and do as much or as little as you choose. Located in Rhinebeck, New York, just 90 miles north of New York City, Omega's natural environment and quiet pace allow for extraordinary experiences to unfold. Learn more at eomega.org.
Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings in the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, inspiring true stories of healing, gratitude, and love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, daily messages of inspiration, hope, and love, and faith, hope, and healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent. To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles.
Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Erica.
And welcome back to Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel. One of the things that I noticed in the write-up about Dr. Erica, that Larry Dossey, Dr. Larry Dossey, was one of the people who endorsed the book, so I thought that was neat, and Reverend Joan Halifax. And so back to you, Bernie.
All right, because one of the things I was thinking about, I was going to just ask you, because all these things about myself practicing came into my head. You know, if somebody would ask me, who are you, what's your name, I would say Dr. Bernie Siegel. So if they wanted to call me Dr., fine. If they wanted to call me Bernie, fine. If they wanted to call me, you know, Dr. Siegel, or just, I didn't care what they called me. Because I wasn't there to promote myself. And I wondered, you know, what kind of connection you had with your patients, so to speak. Did they refer to you as Erica, Dr. Elliott?
Start out saying Dr. Elliott, and very soon they see that I'm not a pretentious person, and so it gets changed to Dr. Erica, or just Erica, and and they treat me with great affection. I really love my patients so much, and that's why I sort of have become known as a medical detective, because I will go way out of my way to try to find out why they feel so bad, and sometimes they don't want to go to the specialist they're supposed to go. So I have to sort of learn about ophthalmology, ENT, and all that stuff. Not that I do those procedures, but just to kind of help them with those kind of problems. Like one woman came in. She's a famous shaman, and she lives in Santa Fe. She's well off, so she had been to many ophthalmologists, but nobody could help her. She had chronic red eyes, and I was sort of intimidated because she'd been to all these famous people, and I'm not even an ophthalmologist. And so I asked her, I asked her, why did you come to me? And she said, because you're known as a medical detective, somebody likes to figure things out. And I, at that moment, said to myself, oh, God, help me, please. And when I'm at a loss, I look up to the left. I've done that as a little girl. I don't really know why, but I looked up to the left, and just briefly, she probably thought I was looking at an ant or something on the wall. And but she said later she knew what I was doing because she's a shaman. And then I said, okay, let's get some blood work. And so I wrote out a prescription for a complete blood count and a copper level. And she looked at the prescription and she said, why copper? And she caught me off guard because I couldn't even make something up. So I just blurted out, I don't know why. And she, being a shaman, she was totally okay with that. That's what she said. I'm okay with that if you don't know why you did it. And so to my great surprise, her copper levels were up. And I thought, wow. And she said, does that have anything to do with my eyes? And I said, no, I don't think so, but you've got to get this copper out of you. It's probably coming from your water. Sometimes if your house, your copper pipes aren't grounded, they will leach copper into your water. I know that because I'm trained in environmental medicine. And so she was so shocked. She got a plumber who was trained in electrical wiring and stuff, and he said, sure enough, you're not grounded. So he grounded her, and then grounded the pipes, rather, and then the copper levels of water went to normal. And she was so impressed, but I said, I'm sorry, it has nothing to do with your eyes, but it's good you got that fixed, because that's very toxic to have high copper that you're ingesting every day. And so then I never heard from her again. And months later, I was going through my charts, and I saw her, and I thought, I'm going to call her up and see. So I called her up, and I said, are you having the same problem with the conjunctivitis? And she said, no, it's gone. And she said, do you think it had anything to do with the copper? And again, I said, no, but I'm so happy you're better. That same day, when people were still getting junk mail, I went to the post office, got a stack of junk mail, throwing it in the trash one by one, and then there's from a lab, it was like a little manual for all the different side effects of the heavy metals. And I thought, oh, I know all this already, and I tossed it in the trash. And then, for some reason, I got up and picked it out of the trash. I mean, this is somebody else operating. I wasn't. And so I turned to the copper. I looked at the bottom of the list, and it said chronic conjunctivitis. And I thought, oh, my God, I never learned that in school. And I called her back, and I just found out that high copper levels can cause chronic conjunctivitis. And she said, I knew you'd figure it out. So that's her story.
Amazing.
Right. Let me add this. And on drawings, the upper left quadrant is the far future or death concept. Meaning if people put a purple kite going up in the sky, they're telling you, you know, they're headed up. But when somebody draws, well, like, you know, you talk about your history. If you drew yourself, you know, out west, I'd say that's where you're going to be living in the, you know, in the future. So it's interesting to me that you look up to the left because you're looking towards your future. And that's why your eyes are doing that. The other is, you use the term changed my life, and it's, you are the one who changes your life, just as the people you're taking care of change their life. Nobody can change you, and you can't change others. You can be guides, you can be helper, you know, an assistant, give them more techniques and options, but change comes from within.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're not afraid of who you are, being different. And I was different, and I want to add this, too, because you could use it with your patients. My patients at the hospital and with other practitioners were called Siegel's crazy patients. But they loved them because that was a compliment. You know,
yeah.
Well, let me give you a quote from an oncologist. He said, I agree with this woman's doctor. She has about 2 months to live, but I know you and your crazy patients, so I'll give her hope.
Oh.
In 6 weeks, she was in complete remission of her cancer.
Oh, I love those
things. Oh, and the letter to me then was, isn't chemotherapy wonderful?
Oh,
I mean,
geez.
They had a sense of humor, too. So I played, you know, if you think about it, I was more like a little bit Indian. I played music in the operating room. I talked to patients under anesthesia.
Wow.
And they heard me. I knew that. And,
wow.
And well, I'll tell you one more, then go back. Heart stops in the operating room. Anesthesiologist is working frantically. He finally said to me, I can't do anything. I'm going to call for a stretcher, take the body to the morgue. I yelled out loud, Alex, it's not your time yet. Come on back.
Wow.
And his heart started beating again.
Oh, my God. It gives me goosebumps.
And the anesthesiologist, I loved what he said. He looked at me. He said, you know, I like working with you.
Oh, yeah.
But
I bet
them.
A lot of people love
you. You know, so keep showing them things, and you won't be crazy after a while, if you know what I mean. Because if it works, nobody's against it. And that's the part. Oh, and one more thing that you should ask your patients, because this I found very helpful. When, again, it's things I couldn't explain or help. How would you describe what you're going through? Migraine headaches, pressure, cancer, failure, and then all kinds of roadblock, different. Some people would say it's a blessing, a wake-up call from a life-threatening illness. But when you say, now, think about what in your life is causing you pressure.
Yeah.
Her headache went away. She went home to help straighten out her marriage.
Oh,
failure.
Wow.
My body failed. I said, that's not my question. How does failure fit your life? Oh, my parents committed suicide when I was a child. I must have been a failure as a child.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, and I don't know how that popped into my head, but even in my own life, years ago I was having vertigo, I got up one day, I said, hey, stupid, why don't you do what you ask your patients to do? What's going on? I said, the world is spinning around. And I said, and then I'm talking to myself, yeah, that's right, you're doing too many things, so you got a wonderful symptom. You have to lie down and rest. and then it went away.
Wow.
You know, when you took care of yourself.
Yeah. I love the stories.
So keep asking. How would you describe that? And then, it just gives them insight. It's not blaming them at all. Yeah.
Exactly. Thank you.
All right.
Erica, on the environmental piece, do you have a focus with glyphosate and all the pesticides things that are in everything that we eat?
Yes, I am focused
on ingestion.
Everything, like what we eat, what we breathe, what we drink, what we're sensitive to. I'm into all of that, and I'm into the electromagnetic field, the impact of that, everything. I mean, everything that impacts my patient's health, I'm into, just because I want to protect them. And and I want them to be educated. I tell them I'm your ally, I'm not your boss. And so my whole thing is about empowering my patients. I try to give them information that will empower them to make choices that are in their best interest.
Yeah, you see, you're healthy. I mean that. The words you use and talk about. When I would talk to my patients about their life and try to empower them, literally the doctors at Yale would say, "Why are you blaming your patients?" I said, "What are you talking about? You ask them what's going on in their life. You know, it's as if it's their fault they got sick."
Oh, no.
I mean, how you interpret, you know, and I'd look at them like, I'm not blaming them. I'm trying to get them to understand, you know, like copper in your water. I mean, you got to look at things or what's happening with your relationships or your job so that it all came together. Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
Oh, and I wonder with the Indian, tell me this too, because the women, you know, outlive men with the same illnesses.
Yeah.
And they'd say, I mean, these are true quotes. I have 9 kids. I can't die till they're all married and out of the house. One woman had 12 cats. I told her kids, don't get rid of them. Tell your mother, nobody wants 12 cats. She can't die. And the men will say, I can't work. What's the point of living?
I know.
And their wife and children are sitting in the room. It blew my mind when you'd get that answer out of a man.
I know.
But what do you see with the Navajo in that way, the male-female thing?
It's a matrilineal society, so the woman runs the show. Even if it looks like the man is running the show, the woman runs the show. Like in old traditional days, I was there 50 years ago, where it was still quite traditional, especially the kids that I dealt with who lived in remote areas, they had kept all their traditions. So one of the traditions that had recently just sort of expired is when a woman wanted to divorce her husband, she simply left the saddle outside the hogan, and that means she couldn't come back.
Interesting.
How old are you, by the way? Because you keep saying 50 years ago.
It was 1971 when I went out there.
Yeah, but how old are you today?
I'm in June, I'll be 72.
Okay, because you sound like you're about 35.
Everybody
right.
says.
And you know what? We've run out of time, and I'm sorry, but we could have used an extra hour with you, Dr. Erica. So, So thank you, Bernie. It's been a great show, and Erica, you just shared so much insight that we could feel where you were and what you were doing and how you were helping the Navajo. So it's fascinating how you storytell, just like Bernie. So
and
with that said,
they'll find in your book, Medicine and Miracles, something that touches them as it did me. You know,
that's right.
With them.
Yeah,
that's right. So everyone get the book, Medicine and Miracles in the High Desert, My Life Among the Navajo People by Dr. Erica Elliott. And we need to fly. Everyone, thank you. Bye for now.
Thank you. This was wonderful. Thank you.
You're
so
welcome.
Much.
We'll invite you back. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Bernie. I feel like I'm related to you.
You are. We're all the same inside.
We all are.
All right.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Deborah, too. Okay. Much love to you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Join us next time on Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Until then, remember, be fully engaged in life, loving every moment as your unique self. In going deep within to discover ourselves, we can also discover self-love. Then, when we let our hearts make up our minds, we connect what our bodies do so well to the power of love. We can boost our ability to grow and heal along with our self-esteem. The sense of empowerment that results from this mind-body connection is one related to self-induced healing. When you add spirit to that connection, making a mind-body-spirit connection, you nourish your soul. For more insight, go to BernieSiegelMD.com.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.